Sai's Glory, His Divine Story, every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m. Shri Sai Ram. Offering myself at Bhagwan's lotus feet, this is Karuna signing in live from Prashanti Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. Good morning and welcome to Morning Glory on Thursday Live. We are coming to you live in real time from the Radio Sai studios here in Prashanti Nilayam, which happens to be my home, my heaven, and also the abode of highest peace. The time in the ashram right now is 40 minutes past 9 a.m., that is Indian Standard Time. Today is Thursday, March the 14th, 2019, and it's a fine morning here in the ashram, except for a little bit of a skirmish in my throat. There is a frog sitting there and not allowing me to speak with clarity, so I beg your indulgence and please bear with me. I won't be too long. The current temperature in the Divine Valley is 27 degrees Celsius with clear skies, crisp breeze and zero air or noise pollution. Today we are expecting daytime highs of 37 degrees in the afternoon, that is Celsius in the afternoon, and overnight lows of 24 degrees Celsius. The traffic this morning, because I came extra early, was absolutely smooth and clear with no hiccups in downtown Puttaparthi. I hope it's still the same way. Serving the ashram and all its allied institutions currently are the dedicated Sevadal volunteers from two states of Bharat, namely Maharashtra and Karnataka. We salute our Sai sisters and brothers who come all from all over the country every single week to selflessly volunteer their services at the lotus feet of their Sadguru, our Sadguru, Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Dear listeners, doesn't it make you wonder what power there is in Baba's love that every week, every single week, 365 days a year, men and women and youth from various states of India come here using their own expenses, of course, vacation time, to serve in his mission. And they all bear all the expenses with so much of joy and gratitude. Naturally, one is left spellbound at the power of this divine land to draw such goodness and sacrifice with so many, from so many people. And personally, as a daughter of lifelong Sevadal parents, I salute every Sevadal volunteer in this great nation of Bharat. Dear sisters and brothers, today on Morning Glory, I have lined up for you a poignant treat, and I think it is going to touch you deeply. This is an extraordinary interview from our classics collection. This one is with the person close to our hearts here at Radio Sai, just one of our own brothers in Team Radio Sai, who lived long enough to record this interview and then merged into the cosmos to work as Bhagwan's instrument on the other side. I really believe that such individuals incarnate with special tasks, and sharing their insights and experiences with our listeners is truly an honor for us here at Radio Sai. That interview was recorded barely, the one I'm speaking about, was recorded just barely a month before my guest merged with Swami. So coming up shortly, Tris with Divinity, this is labeled as part two, with the late Sri Jatin Desai of Connecticut, USA. But first, I would like to most respectfully place a request, sibling to sibling, with all our listeners, and I hope you will take it in the right spirit. Here goes my request. The Supreme Reality, the Absolute Consciousness, visited us and our planet by assuming the form of our most beautiful Lord, Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba, quite recently. During this period, the Divine Incarnate only spread love, selfless love, divine love, compassion and caring. His acts of kindness saw him open amazing schools such as the ones in Prashanti Nilayam. Now, taking inspiration from Swami, many devotees around the country also sought his blessings to open Sai schools in their local communities across India. Did you even know that today there are 37 Sai schools around the globe outside of India? And in Bharat, our great motherland of India, there are over 100 such schools that bear the name of our Lord and operate from north of India all the way from Rishikesh in Uttarakhand and Dharamsala in Himachal Pradesh to parts of southern India in Tamil Nadu, Kerala, Karnataka, Andhra Pradesh, from Gujarat and Maharashtra in the west to Sikkim and West Bengal in the east and everywhere else in between. These schools bear his divine name and are an outcome of immense hard work and sacrifices by the founding members of each school. I have been visiting these schools. I visited 21 of them in the last 6 weeks, I would say, with the grace of Swami. And I simply cannot tell you how inspiring it is to meet the founding members and to hear their stories, because every school has involved a replication of sacrifice by the founding teams as Swami made for us when he founded the schools here. So today, as your sister, dear listeners, I'm reaching out to you to ensure that Bhagwan's legacy in the form of these schools is of the highest and best possible standards, because these schools bear his name. As Sri Sathya Sai Vidya Vahini, which is a program of the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust, we strive to serve these schools by strengthening the hands of our teachers there. But each of these schools needs more committed volunteers who are team players and are familiar with any of the following skills. Number one, teaching or education background, training, technology, administration and coordination. If you have the above backgrounds, that is any experience in teaching, education line, in training, even if it's corporate training, banking training, technology, IT savvy, basic IT savvy will also do, admin and coordination. If you have these, and if you have also the time and commitment and would like to join hands with Sai schools in various remote and semi-urban parts of India, I would love to hear from you. For example, if you live near Chittor in the Erode district of Tamil Nadu, or in Pondicherry, or in Kundarapalli in Tamil Nadu, or in Mattagiri near Hosur, and you're capable of assisting the Sai school teams in areas of teaching, training, or technology, or coordination, please reach out to me at karuna@radiosai.org. K for kite, A-R-U-N-A, at radiosai is one word, .org. I will be so grateful to hear from you, dear sisters and brothers. With that humble request to you, I now want to share a little bit of a background about the interview I'm about to play for you as your Thursday dose of inspiration. It's an episode of Tris with Divinity. The second part, it is called, so if you do a search later on, you write the name of Mr. Jatin Desai, J as in jam, J as in John, J-A-T-I-N, Desai, D-E-S-I-A, and this one is the one that's called Part 2, Tris with Divinity Part 2. Now, Brother Jatin was like a family member here at Team Radio Sai, and after he recorded his first episode, which was aired much earlier, he battled with a serious illness. He overcame it perhaps only to share his love and light with the world and also his learnings from this experience. After this, he came to Parthi and he had a book to offer to Swami and thank him. And he was just speaking to me casually in my office about his experiences, and I just paused him. And I said, "Brother, just hold that thought. Let's walk over to the studio in a bit and record." Meanwhile, I quickly called my husband over, as we know Jatin Bhai personally, and I said, "You have to listen to this recording. This is incredible what Jatin Bhai is saying." And that's what I sat down with him to record, a very poignant and intense session. and that's what I'm going to play for you. Now, by the time after recording it, it took me about 3 to 3 weeks or so to get the file edited, normalized and scheduled for airing, because interviews get scheduled according to, you know, whatever is ready, whatever is in the pipeline. And just as I scheduled it for airing, we received the news that Brother Jatin had merged with Swami. It was quite a shock to all of us. But that interview, in light of what happened, became so much more significant, historic and meaningful to each one of us. And that's why I felt from time to time we should listen to what he had to say and try to grasp the insights that he received. Because at the end of the day, the only certainty in life is that we are all mortal beings. And we all are going to have a moment of truth and a final moment when the curtain falls on this experience that God has given us, this blessing of a life. We should be prepared for it. And I think Jatin Bhai's experiences can help us in understanding how best we can move in that direction. So I'm going to play for you Trisvir Divinity with the late Mr. Jatin Desai. This is part two. And that is how it's listed in our repository. I will look forward to your feedback to this episode of Morning Glory, and I hope you will send us your feedback. Either immediately you can send it or any time on our WhatsApp number, which if you're outside of India, the code for India is +91. And the number for the WhatsApp is 9393258258. Prefix +91 if you're outside of India. This is the number to reach us on our WhatsApp for your feedback. If you prefer email, please reach us at listener@radiosai.org. Now, if apart from this, if you're a person with a background in teaching, training and technology, administration and coordination and would like to help us in a school in Tamil Nadu in places such as Chittor in Erode district in the Union Territory of Pondicherry, in Kundarapalli, in Matagiri Hosur and such places, I have a long list of them, 21 actually, please reach me personally at karuna@radiosai.org. This is a sibling-to-sibling request, so take it in that spirit and consider it only and only that is underscored and bold. If you can consistently spare at least for a year, 3 hours, three times a week. 3 hours, three times a week, 3 into 3 is 9, divine number and all that. Anything less, it's okay. When you're ready, you contact me. With that, over to Trisvir Divinity, part two, with Mr. Jatin Desai. Please enjoy the rest of the show and I wish you a Saisam awesome day ahead. And I hope to be back next Thursday with a better sounding throat. Thank you for your company and enjoy the rest of Morning Glory. Jai Sai Ram. Sai Ram, dear listeners. Welcome to the second episode of Trisvir Divinity with Mr. Jatin Desai of Connecticut, USA. We have recorded an account of Brother Jatin Desai's journey to Swami earlier on in the year 2001. Since then, Brother Jatin has blazed new trails in his career as an innovation specialist. He is a published author of the book Innovation Engine, and he consults in the area of corporate innovation as a management consultant, both in the U.S., India, as well as in some other countries. Jatin Desai also blogs and writes articles for the prestigious Harvard Business Review, Times of India, Economic Times in India, and other prominent leadership magazines. Most importantly, he is a valuable member of the RadioSai Global team, aiding us in our efforts to spread the divine message more effectively to more and more people around the world. But the pressing reason we wanted to have a heart-to-heart conversation with our brother is because of a very close shave with destiny that he has had quite recently. Brother Jatin was on the brink due to leukemia, and just before he was to transition to the other side, he had some astounding spiritual experiences. As a matter of fact, while on the outside he may appear to be the same Jatin Bhai we all work with, the person inside? Who is he? Let's find out who is the new, wizened Jatin and what is his life's goal now, knowing what he does know now, after going all the way to the edge and then being sent back. Sai Ram, Brother Jatin, and welcome home.
Sai Ram, well, nice to be back here again.
And it's wonderful to have you back. Let's begin in November of 2012. On Baba's birthday, that is November 23rd, you were here in Prashanthi Nilayam to offer your new book at the Lotus Feet. What happened?
Well, as I was coming to Parthi, I talked to a few wonderful brothers here, saying that I'm coming. Is there a protocol for, you know, presenting the Swami's manuscript to him? And the basic answer was, no, there's no such thing. You just bring it to the Samadhi and place it in front of Swami's feet. And so luckily, which was unplanned, with the editing process that goes into writing a book, it was wonderful that just a few days before, while I was in India, I was able to finish the manuscript. Mm-hmm. So I brought it, printed it quickly in Mumbai, brought a copy and binded it, put it together for Swami. Figured even birthday I wasn't planning. Somehow it happened that Swami made it happen that I was to be here. It wasn't originally in the plan. It was supposed to have been a short trip to India to visit some clients. Anyways, the manuscript was in my computer. I printed it and since had the opportunity to come here, brought it to Swami, presented it in front of Swami. And like everything else, you go in front of the Swami's chair. And I put it there and I prayed to Swami. I said, Swami, this is your book because it is impossible for me to had ever conceived being in as an entrepreneur for most of my life that I would ever write a book, especially of a management authority. So it is, and I know that when I was writing the book in 2011 and 2012, there was chapters, there was messages, there's paragraphs I don't remember writing because I would write as a daily practice, and then next day I would read what I wrote, and next day, some days I would read and say, did I write that? And those were the small signs that it was really his book. And for a small little guy who was born in Baroda, Gujarat, to ever been, found a worldwide publisher to want to publish a book on a subject such as innovation, was a very humbling effect. So I knew it was only through divine hands that it could have been possible. Anyway, so I presented the manuscript, and as I kneeled down, I prayed to Swami, this is your book, Swami, please do whatever you wish with it. And as I was praying, there was this incredible urge that came out, and I said, Swami, take this body also. I said, this is your body, just like the book. Please do whatever you want with it. And I said, intensely, there was a recollection that there was this feeling of complete sort of surrender, complete just giving away any sort of notion that I exist in that moment in front of the Samadhi. And so it was very interesting now that I look back at it. At the time, I didn't know the feelings, but it reflected on it. So I offered my body and the book, basically. And I got up quickly. As you know, many people are there. You have to quickly get up and move. So I took the manuscript and stood a little bit far away and again prayed from distance.
What overcame you to say something
I don't know.
So drastic?
I have no idea. Absolutely unplanned, unconscious. Mm-hmm. It was just internal, inspired moment. I'm not sure what it was. Even to date, I don't know what it is. Other than I think I've learned now some of the questions that I had that were always daunting me before this story started in November, or at that at, you know, the leukemia cancer started. But anyways, I surrendered the book and I surrendered the body. I said, Swami, you take this and let this be body your instrument from now on. I don't want to be anything. And the third prayer I had is, Swami, please make me a zero. Which means what I was saying is that when you write a book, the natural, most fearful thing I had was my ego would go up. You know, because it happens. It's a book becomes popular, whatever it might happen, and I start acting like this is something that I, all that business. So I said, Swami, please, 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 please make sure that I am a zero in this. And those are the three prayers, and I walked away. And then the story began. I went back to doing some work after the birthday here in India. And I went back to U.S. Then I came back in January for more work. And I happened to be in Parthi also. But around middle of January, I was visiting India. And all of a sudden, I became very ill. And that's where all of this stuff started. The story, short story for listeners is I went through a diagnosis of a cancer called leukemia, which is called a blood cancer. It's not a hard cancer such as an organ cancer where you have a tumor and things like that, like pancreas or breast cancer or, you know, some sort of a gland type of a cancer. This was what's called leukemia, which is a blood cancer.
And when were you exactly diagnosed? By the time all the tests came and you received this sad pronouncement scale?
Yeah, so the first early sign of it was about on February 20th.
2013. Okay. Just a few months ago this year.
Just earlier this year. So the incident with the book was last November in 2012. And 2013 in
later.
January, I was here, again back in India, in Parthi also, for darshan. And I had mild some sign of illness. And I thought it was flu because it lasted 2 days. When I went back in February, first week, same thing happened. This time it was 4 days. So that's when I went to the doctors. Mm. They did a blood test and they found something was not right. And that's when they did a proper what's called bone marrow test. And that was on February 20th. At that point, the doctors weren't declaring what exactly might be, but they had a doubt now because nobody does bone marrow test, which is a spinal test in the pelvic area with a, I guess, very big needle. No pain, though, because they numb you out. But it's painful, you know, day after or two. But that test became, the test of the bone marrow is you put a needle in and you pull out what's called bone marrow. It's a liquid. It looks like blood. In my case, nothing came out. So doctors said, Mr. Desai, I didn't get anything. Can I go in another spot? So I said, sir, you have to do what you need to do. So he went in another spot, praying Swami now, as I'm sitting in a small room, maybe he'll find the marrow, you know. And he went again, no marrow. So he said, sir, I have to do a biopsy now, which means taking a piece of the bone inside and taking it out for a pathology test, for a lab test. And he says, now we have to do that. No problem. It happens all the time. He calmed me down, you know, and my family doesn't know anything about this because this was like I was just going in for a quick blood test and they said, now turn into a bone marrow test. So anyways, 3-4 days later, he had a general idea. By that time, I had become very weak. It started actually, as I said, middle of early February. And now we're about 20th of February, so things had started becoming weak in my body. And fundamentally, the blood cancer is what it does is it kills good cells. So your good cells are red cells, your white cells, and what's called platelets. All of them had been dying, which means your system doesn't have a very strong fighting mechanism left anymore. And you become weak. So that was about February 20th.
Received the news, finally, the prognosis was not good and it was pronounced that you had leukemia. How did you receive the news?
You know, funny thing about the modern medicine and the doctors, depending on the doctors you get, they don't like to tell you exactly what you have. In fact, I don't think I was ever told that, Mr. Desai, you have leukemia. That was never told. The word cancer was never used. They said, you know, basically, we have an AML version of leukemia. I'm not 100% sure yet, but we'll test it. That was a kind way of saying you have AML leukemia, which they kind of knew, but they never say it. And said, once we get the final test, we will begin the chemotherapy process. So you kind of knew that was a way of saying you have cancer.
Yeah.
And the assumption is they probably assumed that everybody reads. So they thought that I would know what leukemia is. I didn't know what leukemia was the first time you hear it. I have heard of it, but I didn't know exactly what that meant. By this time, it was the final diagnosis between February 20th was not done until when they told me to go visit a cancer institute, special institute in Boston, which is called Dana-Farber Institute. The Dana-Farber Institute, I was there, it took me about 3 weeks to get there due to weather issues of the snowstorm and appointment setting. So almost from February 20th, I went to Dana-Farber, I think on March 15th, almost a month had gone by, which I think was the most important month for some of the interesting things that I've now learned in that three and a half week period. So February 20th or so, 19th or so, is when officially they diagnosed me,
right,
and my treatment started for chemotherapy.
So during this period, obviously, it's a lot to process this kind of news. All of a sudden, you have a young family, three young children, your wife is so young, you're young yourself, and your parents living in Florida down south. You underwent a process. It must have been so much of internal dialogue, internal process. What was it like when you experienced this heightened state of awareness? Walk us through it.
Yeah, it... Let me back up a little bit to make the story a little bit more clear of the 5 months. The story is diagnosis of leukemia was about February, March.
Mm-hmm.
I was hospitalized for 5 times in 5 months for chemotherapies and hospitalization. And then and last or first week of July, middle of July, was my last treatment out of the hospital. So I've been free since. So the today is really, the story is maybe in three parts: before, middle, or during, and then after.
Mm-hmm.
So the before part was there was an intense desire for some questions I had of Swami, you know, that I wasn't able to find answers for.
Questions like?
So one of the questions I had was about Swami leaving leaving his body. And I wasn't going through that. I was never sort of questioning, why did you leave, Swami? Or, you know, that I was sad or anything like that. The most intense question I had was, Swami, why did you choose the physical, most human way of leaving?
With hospitalization.
Hospitalization for a month and so much pain on the body. And what was the meaning of all of this drama? Because to me it was drama. But I couldn't understand, what is this drama for? What are the lessons? And not being privy to anything close or not being accessible anymore, who do you ask? So this was something that I always pondered about. Second question I also wondered about through just curiosity and just being a spiritual aspirant of Swami's teachings was, I couldn't understand, especially in Bhagavad Gita, Swami talks about three things very important that stands out for me. One is surrender, detachment, and Maya. And in chapter 7, I believe, Swami specifically says to Arjuna, he says, Arjuna, you can do all the things in the world possible to attain moksha, but to attain moksha, you have to surrender. You also have to detach. And by this, so bhakti and devotion and seva and all those things, you know, jnana yoga and all that is important, but you must actually surrender and detach. And only when you do that, you can come near my doorstep of my abode. And even when you come doing all of that, you cannot come unless I will it. In other words, unless I remove the veil of Maya. Maya, he says, is my mama Maya, which means that it is my energy. Maya itself is my energy, just like five elements, just like law of karma, that unless I remove the layer of Maya, only then you can actually understand me, which is achieving moksha. And so I started thinking, I said, Swami, you're telling us to do seva, telling us to do bhakti, telling us to become more jnani and do all these wonderful institutions you've given us. And I think I can understand the concept of surrender, but I don't understand the concept of detachment. And I can understand detachment from the worldly things, you know, including my family relationships. Tomorrow morning I could be completely detached from the material world and live on a simple two pieces of clothes and I'll be happy, Swami. And I could conceive that in this lifetime I could practice such detachment. But I said, detachment to the body is what you're emphasizing all the time. How is it that in Kali Yuga, that we live in the society, even our heads are in the forest, but we actually detach from our body and still carry on our normal duties? I don't understand that concept. And I would ask people and I would not be satisfied with any answers. So this concept of detachment from body while living and doing daily things was a big question mark for me. And the second question mark was, what comes first, Swami, surrender or detachment? Because you talk about both things, but which comes first? Was another curiosity question. The other question I had was, seeing all the pain and suffering in the world, in asking that question about Swami, why did you go through all the suffering? You know, what is it that we're supposed to learn about pain and suffering, which you showed to the world? Because he didn't do anything without some meaning, so I couldn't understand the concept. So these were the questions I had, just pondering it over for a long time, especially the year or two, you know, since he left. So as this experience started, after I was diagnosed around middle of February, my body started to become very weak. So my left leg, entire leg, was swollen up. Because remember, at this point, the blood is not circulating in the body as well, and it's not healthy blood. The percentage of cancer cells in my body was 30%, which is very high in the blood. So 30% of the blood is bad, and it's increasing. It was probably increasing to, you know, percentage every other day, who knows. But 30% is very high when they finally started giving me chemo treatment for leukemia. It was around 30%. And so, and they couldn't take the marrow out because it had developed what's called fibrosis inside of a bone, which is basically spikes. Mm. There's so much spikes inside the marrow that the marrow can travel. And so it had stopped producing, and the marrow produces all the red cells, blood cells, etc. So it was not producing all these cells. And when you don't have good cells producing, the body starts retaining water. Mm-hmm. There's no proteins going to the body. So any type of organ can start failing. In my case, the left leg started to swell up. My mouth had lots of sores, which means you couldn't eat. You had to just drink. So all the food you take was through liquid diet. So those conditions and a few other things.
Must have lost a lot of weight?
Not in the first month, only in the hospitalization I lost some weight. But during there's a phase in the journey, the first month or so, there was a phase of, I don't know how to describe it, but Swami was preparing me for something. And there was a stage where I was convinced that Swami has already cured me before I was hospitalized. It was a three-week period where I was completely in tune with, best way to describe it is in communion with Swami, 24/7. For somehow I moved into that stage. I'm not sure how or what, but there was...
How were you in communion? But internally, did you hear his voice? Did you see him?
No, didn't see him.
Just intuitive knowing?
There was a complete conversation, just internal conversation with him, and he would answer in my mind the thoughts would come back as answers, including the conversation was such that Jatin, go and have a meal now, go downstairs, go to the restroom, go lie down, put up your feet. All these, every small little tasks was instructed by him. And
did he give you any instructions about settling your estate or organizing stuff?
No, nothing like that. He basically was preparing me. He's basically saying, no worries. Why are you worrying? Why are you worrying? There's no need to worry. So I never had a feeling of why me. I don't ever remember asking. And the conviction was, this is just a passing cloud. Mm-hmm. So his attitude in the conversation and communion with me was, this is just passing cloud. This is nothing. So that belief that this is not supposed to be here, it's here, resulted into this complete faith that this was just a passing cloud. Mm-hmm. And so I had never questioned anything, and everything that was happening in terms of the doctors telling me was, okay, what's next? Okay, what's next? You need more transfusion. Okay, what's next? You need to do this test. Okay, what's next? You might have a blood cut. Go and get an MRI done. Okay, what's next? It was this attitude of, play the part, play the drama out. There's some big drama going out that I'll tell you about it later. That was that type of a communion with Swami. Mm-hmm. So there was never, any question. Of course, everyone else had questions, but I had no questions to worry about per se. And there was absolutely same thing with my wife and the family. Nobody really had doubt that this was just a passing cloud. This is all going to go away because it came so quick. October of last year, there was no sign in my blood. It was very healthy blood. Normal blood tests were very healthy. So this all of a sudden came in February. And so this 3 weeks period before I was hospitalized, it was a constant communication with Swami. And to the point where it elevated to a very high level where I would not be able to see outside in the nature. I would look outside my windows on my crutches as I was walking on my own. I would not be able to tolerate the brightness of the nature. Every tree, every leaf on a tree, every pine on a pine tree was a needle on the pine tree was bright like sun. I could not see, I could see more than 10 seconds and that needle would become completely like sun.
It was nothing to do with the medicine you were using for...
No, I had no medicines yet.
Chemo?
No, chemo
it's
hadn't
not
started
one of
yet.
These, oh, it hadn't started.
No, this was before I was hospitalized. So this is the stage where he was preparing me for
so
what was to come.
So you were seeing all this light in nature?
Absolutely. So think of it as I was in discussion with Swami all the time, 24/7. I would only do what he would tell me to do. And there was no doubt. I would look at the mirror of this body, and I would see Swami's eyes my body. So I would be able to converse with Swami, and what I see in the mirror is Swami in those eyes. That is what was going on all day and every day as I would even visit the bathroom. That's what was happening. And then... this nature experience started. So I said, what is this? You know, why am I seeing all this? I cannot bear looking outside. We would drive in the car to go to the doctor's appointments, which was happening almost every other day. I could not see. I had to put my eyes closed if we were driving to different places, you know. But started to tolerate that a little bit. And Swami says, to the point where this is just part of the process. No worries. It's part of the process. And then there was one night where, again, he elevated the awareness, the internal awareness. Some people have told me that, you know, you were experiencing this fourth or fifth dimensions, where the chakras were opening up, and the nature was really showing its true form, which is the form of love, in the form of energy. And so there was a high level of maybe heart chakra was opening up, and so was maybe others. And so part of it was, I don't know what it is, you figure it out. By this time, the communication with Swami was a nice, subtle sentence where if I would question him on something, like, Swami, should I do this? And he would say, hey, your plan or my plan? Mm-hmm. So there was all the time, anything I questioned, Swami, should I do this? Hey, your plan or my plan? Somehow there's this, that he had a plan. He says, what are you worrying about? This is my plan, you're just a little puppet. So that feeling that somehow became aware is how I went through this process of preparing for hospitalization. Once I got into hospitalization, the short story is, for AML leukemia, which is a type of four or five different versions of leukemia, treatments are usually minimum of 1 year. And over spread out over a year. And if you need a transplant, a bone marrow transplant, then it's altogether about 18 months to 2 years. Mine was 5 months altogether. So that's the short story. And why it was 5 months is because only through, I believe, truly what it was his plan. It was his doing. When I finished my first hospitalization, which was what they call induction therapy, where they kill all the cells through chemotherapy. It's a 7 days of continuous 24/7 chemo. Now, typically, a typical body, even a young person, they told me that would have a considerable amount of side effects, like vomiting or nausea. I didn't have anything. No side effects for chemotherapy. So doctors were surprised. The only side effect I had was they gave me blood pressure medicine, because chemo... everybody reacts differently to chemo. So my BP was shooting up. So they gave me BP medicine. So I had some allergic reaction to some other medicines they gave me, but nothing to the chemo. I recovered fast. Usually you're in the hospital for 30 days. I was home in 24 days, first time. And then instead of having four more chemos afterwards, I only had two. And then each time, it was very little side effects. The side effects, in the first time, I lost 25 to 30 pounds. Which is about 15-20 kilos. So that was a difference.
And you're a very slim person
so losing,
to begin with.
His
so
losing
that
was
would be
quite a, you know, quite a bit. Quite
that's a
bit.
Lot of weight for somebody your
yeah,
size.
Yeah. And usually what chemo, one of the things of chemo is when you kill all the cells, blood cells, you're losing your immune system. You have no fighting mechanism. So even if you bleed, there's no way to stop the bleeding. Or if you conceive a bacteria, let's say somebody with cold or something, you conceive a cold, there's no fighting mechanism. So the only way is to prevent all that is if they throw more medicines into you. So it's a very sort of a sensitive period. Mm-hmm. But I had nothing like that. None of that effects happened.
Instead, you were talking more and more with Swami.
Oh, because now with Swami, yes, exactly. So in the three-week process, one of the conditions of leukemia is you get this cold fever. You have very fever would spike up 2-3 times in an hour, short periods. And then all of a sudden you get hot spells. So you get cold shivers and hot spells. Is 15-20 minutes, sometimes it will last, you know, longer than that, sometimes an hour. But they were going on every day and there was nothing they could do. It was just part of the leukemia, blood becoming cancerous. Well, it was very painful. Very painful, where the body, when it was cold, it would shiver to the place where the entire bed would shiver because the entire body is, you know, shaking. And to the point where I had to put towels in my mouth because the teeth would just move at 100 miles an hour. So it could hurt my tongue. It would literally bite off my tongue. So I had to put, you know, preventions like that. So the pain was very much. But in this process, my plan, your plan, conversation, Swami said, okay, this pain's coming. The fever's coming. Here's what I want you to do. So he gave me step-by-step internal instructions on how to completely discard the pain. The pain came on the body, but I never felt it. So I mastered the technique of how to deal with any type of bodily pain.
What were the steps?
So breathing was one. Deep breathing, certain type of breathing, basically diaphragmatic breathing. Then he would tell me to hold it for a few seconds. And then if I didn't do it, he would correct me for how long it was. And then as the shivers went up, it went through like a sine wave, up and down. He told me that when it reaches to the top, the pain is then going to subside. So while going up, I'm breathing and breathing, breathing, and then he knew immediately when he sensitized me that, okay, it's now about to go down. At that point, he says to breathe out, and so on and so forth. So he made me realize when the cycle of the pain, you can actually be completely in tune with the pain wave itself. And you can breathe in and out of that pain wave as the pain is coming. It's not continuous.
Somewhat says, like a Lamaze class.
Exactly.
You have a Lamaze partner who helps you when the contractions come. So your Lamaze partner was Swami.
Exactly. Although I was not conceiving a baby, conceiving leukemia, but it's a same process. And so all this pain would come, and so now I was very aware of the pain process as it was coming at the bodily level, at the molecular or maybe, I don't know what you call it, physiological level. And so I became master at, you know, how to manage pain. So again, all of these things I was preparing. So before I got into the hospital, the pain, of course, was more because of the process of chemo. And I had no worries. And in fact, most issues were dealt with very easily, and the doctors were always surprised and shocked, saying, you know, how you look so fabulous, what are you doing, you know, all these things. And I had his picture of Swami next to me, and I would keep pointing at him. And so doctors, of course, initially would ask, who is this? I would say, this is Swami, this is my master, he's my center of my life. And then they would, of course, want to know more, so I would tell them. And my doctors would say, then at some point I remember one doctor says, oh, do you have that vibhuti? Do you have some of that powder? I said, yes, here. So they would take it. Then one day a nurse walks in and she says a picture. She says, oh, that's Sai Baba. I said, yes. I was shocked, you know. And she says, how do you know him? I said, yes. And she has a South American, you know, accent. So I said, how do you know? So she says, I went to see Swami 20 years ago in Puttaparthi. I said, oh, tell me more. Now I'm very curious. These were happening every day. And she said, I even had interview with Swami. And then another person would walk in. And nurses would come in and say, can we just come and sit here? We feel there's a very peaceful environment here. Of all the rooms, they would come and just sit and talk. If nothing else, they would just sit to take a time off. I was just surprised. And then another nurse comes in and says, you know, there's something, someone standing next to you. It's very, very peaceful aura and very, very powerful. And she was intuned. People would tell me these things. Then another nurse came in and says, oh, that's Sai Baba. I said, yes. I said, how do you know? He said, well, my neighbor used to be a devotee of Sai Baba. He's gone back to Poland. Oh, okay. He says, sir, you know, I remember he's giving me this powder you had, you know. Do you have that powder? I said, yes. I said, why? I said, well, my son is chronically ill. He has this mental, these headaches, you know, chronic headaches. And I've taken him to so many doctors in New York and Boston and everywhere. No one is able to help him. I believe Sai Baba can help him.
So you were doing your own seva work in the hospital, like a true evangelist.
No. So again, Swami, I would laugh. I look at Swami's picture and he said, your plan or my plan? My plan. He then basically, I would laugh because now I was not, this is the point, this is where he would reemphasize, you see, this is a passing cloud. Yeah. I'm using you. Yeah. For this.
There was a purpose to the whole journey.
Absolutely.
It did get scary at one point in time, for maybe not for you, but for Anjali, for the family.
For the family, of course, you know, anyone who has a family member knows that cancer is not something you take lightly. But I tell you, in a convoluted way, I wish everyone had cancer. In a very, very, it sounds very silly, but I believe for me, it has accelerated the journey to Swami's feet in a way that I don't believe at all that it would have been possible to even comprehend at the intellectual level living in his body. Because knowing that you're not a body is one thing, okay? But actually living that you're not a body now, going through this experience and what I'm aware of every day is completely different feeling. And same thing with attachment and detachment. So one day I was in the hospital and it was maybe 1 a.m. or so, and all of a sudden I hear a patient next to me crying. She was an elderly lady. She had started to yell, I should say, not crying. It was disturbing enough that it woke me up. And others, probably. So it was kept going on. So nurse finally, you know, when nurses come and wake you up every hour or two or whenever, at least 3-4 hours, to take your vital signs. So when finally my nurse came, I politely asked her. I said, is she okay? You know, the woman next door. And she's not supposed to say anything, but business time, all nurses and I have become very sort of, you know, close. She said, Mr. Desai, she's not well. We have to monitor her 24/7. And then she opened up and she said, she wants to go to the bathroom. She has a sensation. She has a cancer, that she feels she needs to go to the bathroom, and she doesn't need to, but she's very weak. She hasn't handled the chemo well. And so last time she went, she fell down. And if she falls down, breaks anything, it gets even worse for her, so we have to watch her. But she keeps wanting to get out of the bed, and she won't stop, even though, you know, she doesn't need to go. So we're watching her now. So they put a full-time nurse. And then she politely, you know, continues further, and this is where the deep lesson is that I hadn't expected. He says, the worst is not that. The worst is none of her family will come visit her. She has family, but they won't come visit her.
So sad.
So sad. So I started sobbing. So Swami comes.
in the mind.
So Swami comes in the mind and he says, you see, now you know. So I said, Swami, what do you mean? So once I sort of captured myself back, I said, Swami, what do you mean? Now remember, I'm used to having this conversation. Right. And he said these words like, now you know. Mm. I said, what do you mean, Swami? He says, you see, you know what pain is, and I've taught you how to tolerate. Now you know what suffering is. Mm. So what he's saying is, suffering is when you feel pain of others. So suffering is, we look at suffering as, oh, that person is suffering. But we don't actually understand suffering, mm-hmm. he says. That's not suffering, mm-hmm. he says. Suffering is when you
feel
the pain of someone.
Yeah.
And then this is the most important lesson that he continues on. He says, you see, I left in the human way. Remember the question I had, remember? He says, I left the same way. I left because I took on the suffering or the pain of the entire world as I was leaving. In other words, what he said is, I sacrificed my body in that last month. My body was used to take on the suffering, to take on the pain of the world, whatever the pain was at the time. So even Swami's body, compassionate Lord, was not at waste. Although I was thinking that way, Swami, why did you choose to leave that? He didn't choose to leave that way. He chose to leave in a most divine way. And only through his experience, I got that answer. And when Swami left, if you recall, there was the nuclear disaster in Japan. And one of my thoughts was, Swami, so many people are going to die. So many young children are going to suffer. And what my immediate thought at the time was, oh, you took on the suffering of that disaster, didn't you? That's why I felt very sort of satisfied now with that one question of, why did he choose to leave? He chose to leave only out of love for us. So pain and suffering was answered. Mm. How he left was answered. Mm. Detachment, surrender. Detachment, he taught me how to detach from the body and the body pain. And the answer he gave later on, so about a month after I was done with my first induction, I went to Dana-Farber and they did another bone marrow test. Mm. Because they have to test every so often to make sure there was no bad cells left. And this time the good news was, in 30 days of my hospitalization, I was completely cured of leukemia. They announced it as complete remission. So everybody's happy, I'm happy. But then I asked the bone marrow transfer doctor assigned to me, I said, sir, how did this happen? And he said, we don't know. So he had done all the genetic testing on me. So there was no what's called mutations or signature for leukemia that was predisposed.
Mm-hmm.
So if there is a genetic testing will show, and for all of us, if there is a chance of leukemia coming
mm-hmm.
back. Now, good news, bad news is we all have leukemia cancer cells. In other words, we have all cancer cells mm-hmm. in all of us.
Our bodies, yeah.
Everybody has some percentage. But the immune system is strong enough to kill all of these off. In my case, it was not. So I asked the doctor, I says, doctor, genetic testing is showing that I had no precondition for this. And therefore, you're telling me I don't have to have a bone marrow transplant. Because bone marrow you need only if you have such genetic disposition. Because it basically says your immune system is weak and it will never be able to fight cancer cells 100%. In which case, they take a immune system from someone else that's matching donor and put it in you. That's what's called bone marrow
transplant.
They transfer the stem cells
yeah.
from someone else that your body type is matching with.
Yeah.
And for us South Asian Indians, the chances are lower because there's less donors in the bank, if you will. But in my case, luckily there was one young man who's been found in U.S. that can, if needed, provide that. So I said, you know, I don't need bone marrow. You're telling me I don't have to have it. And if I need it, I have somebody Swami's already set up. But I asked him an important question. I said, sir, tell me, when did this leukemia start in me? You know, this condition. So this is based on your diagnosis. It probably started near end of November.
That's when you were here with the book.
Yes.
Offering yourself at the lotus feet. So, in hindsight, you could connect all the dots.
In hindsight, what he answered is easy. He said, surrender comes before detachment.
So
for me, for my lesson.
The puzzle was
all fitting in. All this stuff, he was just perfectly. And during this process, every day, he would show me the signs of his presence through some of the things that I mentioned, as well as materialization of vibhuti and amrutam. He would be sending it to me to heal me. And convincingly, he was showing that everything is cured. So I had no doubts.
But before this conviction that you were being cured came on, there was an episode where he gave you an ultimatum. Would you care to share?
Before I was hospitalized in that highly enlightened state, let's call it, whatever dimension, where I was in tune with Swami, one evening, it was a Wednesday, he instructs me that, Jatin, it's time for you. I had prayed for Swami to see his divine form. I said, Swami, show me your purest divine form, just like you showed to Arjuna. You know, I wanted to see that all my life. That has been a prayer. So this one evening, all of a sudden says, hey, you want to see my form, no? So I said, yes, Swami. So I'm going to show it to you. I said, yes, when? Now remember, I don't even go brush my teeth unless he tells me to. So there was a complete no-nonsense approach to the internal dialogue going on. And I think my family felt I had gone cuckoo. Probably, you know, but they had, by this time they were used to whatever I was saying, and they were happy to oblige in whatever Swami was instructing me, because I would tell them, no, don't eat this, they would not make that, make this, they would make that, that type of thing. So this one evening Swami says, my wife was teaching yoga, she was not home, and my daughter, 14-year-old, she was home with me looking after me. And so when he said this, he says, okay, I'm going to show it to you tonight. Tell your daughter, tell Reina, and tell your wife, Anjali, that you're leaving this body tonight. And I said, okay, Swami. There was no pause, there was no question, there was no, like, huh? What? Tonight? Okay. So I quickly call Reina up. I said, Reina. So I yelled out from my bedroom. I said, where's Mom? Is she home yet? I said, no. So as soon as she comes home, you both need to come up here. I have important news to tell you. So she says, okay. So I was waiting and waiting. Finally, my wife came home. I heard the doorbell. And quickly I told Reina, go tell Mom quickly to come up here. Immediately. There was a sense of, I had to tell her immediately. Swami was waiting. You know, already because an hour or so had gone by. So they came up and I said, Swami's telling me that he's taking me for 2 days and this body is to stay here and don't touch the body. And I'll be back in 2 days.
Like the Shirdi Baba
just
act.
Just like that. Simple. And so they were, of course, completely shocked, you know, as you would expect them. I was confused. I said, why are you behaving this way? He's telling me to go. I said, you have to tell your parents. I said, no. He didn't tell me to tell parents. He told me to tell you too. I said, you have to tell your sister. What about your two other kids who are in college? I said, no. That's none of my business. You just need to know. And you, by the way, need to come here, and he's going to give me more instructions. Now, she would, of course, my daughter started crying and profusely because, you know, who wants to hear that news? Anjali, my wife, is very worried, of course, because now she completely is convinced I've gone cuckoo. She tolerated 3 weeks of cuckoo-ness, you know. But now she's completely... So she calls up my family, my sister, and tells me to get on the phone and tell her. So I tell my sister. I said, this is what's happening. It's happening before midnight today. And it was about 9 in the evening now.
Swami told you he's taking you only for 2 days.
Huh. He said, I'm taking you for 2 days. Tell them not to touch the body and you'll be back in 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. No other instructions. And where I was supposed to sleep and so on and so forth. And so he's telling me that you need to start doing chanting, mantra chanting, around the body. So all of you should sit down around my body and start chanting. So I told them all. They followed the instructions. Because at this point I was so convinced and I was so eagerly and excited. Because Swami is calling you, he's going to show his divine form, and I'm very excited to leave the body. No questions answered. Forget the Dana Farber, meeting that I had for the doctors the first time. I said, no. My wife says, you have to go to Dana Farber. I said, no, that's not part of the instructions. Tell him to postpone it. Because it was within 2 days. So I tell this to my sister. She comes rushing to our home, from about 7 miles away. By the time she comes, I'm lying in the bed and alone, and she comes upstairs. And by this time, Swami has said you may not be coming back. I have work for you on the other side. So I tell my sister, I said, so she's under the impression that I'm coming back in 2 days. So when she comes in, I said, so she confirms everything. I said, Swami says this, Swami, yes. And you'll be back in 2 days? And I said, no. Now he's changed his mind. He says I may not come back. So she's shocked. Now my wife doesn't know, so she calls them up, and my young daughter. All three of them are standing, and I said, look, Swami said this, I may not be coming back. That's all he wants me to tell you. I said, who's going to tell your parents? I said, you tell them. That's not the instruction. I'm only following. This was the communion going on. To make a long story short, I lied down. They started chanting all night.
On the bed?
On the bed.
What were they chanting?
I think it was Om Sai Ram, something like that. There was a mantra that they were playing. I don't remember. But so while they were singing, Swami would tell me, say, hey, tell your wife she's not singing loud enough. So I would tell her. Tell your daughter, blah, blah, blah. Tell your sister. And I would instruct them on what he's saying. That's how, what was going on. So I'm looking for 12 o'clock. I am looking for 12 o'clock. And he said, Lord Yama is coming. So he's coming through that door, which is one door coming into our bedroom. So I'm listening to the chanting. I'm chanting, and I'm waiting for him to come. By this time, the two kids have fallen asleep. Now it's midnight. They've fallen asleep on a hard rock floor. Wooden floor, and this is now in February, so it's cold. It's very cold, man. It's winter time. But those are the instructions we were following. Morning comes, and I'm still there. All night chanting, so now I'm very upset, actually. So I said, Swami, kya hua? Because I'm eager, and there was a very close moment where he was telling me, here he comes, and then at the last minute, he says, okay, he's not coming. I've changed my mind. Your plan is to do more work here. And I paused. And I said, okay, that's it. Finished. And I said, what was the point? I said, Swami, what was the point of all this? And he said, your plan or my plan? You see, you should never be fearful of death. I have now prepared you never to be fearful of death and your family. That's my plan. That was my plan all along. And I'm just sitting back. I said, okay. And we got up next day and moved on. So today...
How did you feel when you woke up that morning?
I was upset.
Oh, that's in your head, of course,
I'm
physically?
I'm upset physically. No, I was normal. I didn't sleep all night. But I was normal. No energy loss.
Mm-hmm.
And back to the normal. So he prepared all of this, as my analysis now is, he's preparing our entire family for this through this cloud on some of the most important lessons that we would never learn. What family would have such experience of dealing with someone who's actively going to die by 12 o'clock? And be prepared for it, physically, mentally, emotionally. It's an interesting exercise.
to say the least, very intense experiential learning, tough life lessons.
Yeah, so point I think for me is a few things. The most important lesson I think for me is when you intensely ask Swami, intensely, it has to be with intensity, he absolutely, absolutely delivers what you exactly need to learn. It's the lack of intensity, because I remember reading Swami one quote when someone asked him, I think it was Dr. Sandweiss or someone like that, or maybe it was Dr. Hislop, said, Swami, of all the things that we devotees do, what is it the one thing that we could do to improve on our spiritual path? Something like that. And his short answer was intensity. And I remembered that from a long time ago. And I believe that when I put the manuscript in front of Swami on November 23rd, 2012, without pre-planned surrendering of the body occurred, that was an intense surrender. It was not planned. It was not preconceived. It happened because it was planned to happen. Mm-hmm. I had prepared to have happened, because intensity to know Swami, I can never know Swami. It's impossible. But I can have a lot of faith in him. And that intensity allows me to now have faith. And now he's shown me how his hand moves. And every day, every moment of the day, his hand is constantly moving, which now I have a full faith in, which I didn't before. That is always his plan. He has a plan. Once you surrender, it's his plan, and there's no worrying about anything. And for me, I no longer worry about my death. I no longer worry about my body. I no longer worry about my worldly possessions. Because he's absolutely... An example is, I'm a management consultant, as you said earlier, and if you look at my calendar for the last 3 to 5 years, there's not too many spots where I was not interacting with customers. Just to show his hand, how powerful his hand is, and why I know this is a cloud, and he said it so, is I had no business to deliver in these 5 months. I had no contracts that I had to fulfill here, anywhere in the world. So if you look at my five-year history, that's impossible to see a five-month gap anywhere where I didn't have to interact with customers. The only interactions I had, even through diagnosis, allowed me to finish those. And then the diagnosis, exactly, my last commitment was February 19th with a customer in Omaha. And February 20th, I was diagnosed. That's how perfect the plan was.
The calendar was being planned very carefully.
Way ahead. Even some of the tenders that I had proposed, we didn't win those. Because if I had won those, I would have had to be out of country those 5 months. We didn't win them. When the doctors and I decided I no longer need any more treatment in January, literally within 24 hours, I had 4 to 5 inquiries for new work. And one customer called within 1 week and said, you know, that tender that we gave you, you didn't win. We now would like you to take that same tender, but for, instead of 3 months, 7 months.
Even better.
And no competition, no price negotiation, nope, nothing. Whatever you want to charge us, come. This is a big country to do some work on innovation. So the point is, he has completely showed that when you surrender, every little detail he takes care of. And he does nothing and has done nothing to not have a deep meaning and to show us, you know, like the physical form that he left with. And there's many, many, many lessons I can go on with, but you know, these are some of the most important lessons.
And as a listener, when I'm hearing you, I think your story is a perfect case study of theistic existentialism, where they talk of this process of infinite resignation to the point of absurdity, and then you have a leap of faith, and that's when the miracle of faith actually manifests.
Exactly.
And it's a sequence of events that happens.
Exactly.
Now, having been to the edge, and now that you're back, who are you? Are you a different person today?
I'm a much different person at the deeper level, at the level of awareness. It's probably the best place to see the difference for me internally. Physically, I'm the same now.
You've gained all the weight and you look well with Swami's grace, healthy and well.
Yep, I'm completely back in that sense. I have no fear anymore of anything. That's the level of awareness. Because everything, I believe, is only happening because it is part of the plan, His plan. And so the awareness now is, when will He take away my mind now? You know, mind is still an obstacle.
Mm-hmm.
And when will He remove the maya? Those are the two things I'm more aware of that I need to work on, to prepare to earn the grace where He can remove the maya and earn the grace to stand at the footsteps of His abode.
Mm-hmm. But before the encounter with leukemia and after, has your life's purpose shifted? Goalposts different?
More intense.
More same, but
same
more
goal,
intense.
But much more intense.
Effort is more intense.
Much more intense. Just constant intense. There's many things I question myself, you know, now that I used to do out of discipline, such as doing daily altar prayers. I still do them. But the emphasis is more on doing prayers 24/7 now, not just...
Like a process
in
of
the
breathing,
morning.
Yeah, not a formal.
Yeah, there's some things I question, you know, as is it, even sadhana, some activities, is it necessary? So I'm more aware of what is the lesson in every activity that I'm doing or every interaction. Why am I meeting certain people? He sends new people in my life, you know, and I ask, I'm more aware of now asking Him, why are they here? Sometimes He tells me, sometimes He says, my plan. So that internal dialogue is more intense. So I think
the dialogue still continuing?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that heightened sense of ability to see the light in nature, is it still there?
It's gone.
It's gone.
No, it's gone. It was gone as soon as I was hospitalized.
Mm-hmm.
Once I got out of that zone, somehow I got out of that zone as soon as I was in the hospital. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What can I say, Brother Jatin? This is one of the most intense sequence of Psi experiences I've ever heard, and I'm sure it'll be very intense and profoundly useful for our listeners.
Well, I think the most important thing, I think I was at a conference and I asked everyone in the audience, I was emceeing that, and I asked, how many of you have been touched direct or indirectly by cancer? And every single person, 200-300 people, hands went up.
So
I hope the lessons that I have now experienced helps everyone who directly or indirectly has or will potentially, because it's such a devastating, you know, part of our life now, the cancer. It's everywhere in every country. I would say maybe the most important thing to do is to remember you're not the body. You know, the cancer occurs only to the body, not to you. That's probably the most important thing. And then, please have intensity for Swami. Swami is in your life. Improve the intensity. Then everything will take care of itself, I believe. That's probably the two most important lessons. Intensity will create faith. Through faith, you can know who really God is. And only through knowing God, you can have love for God. So unless without intensity, I don't think it's possible to fully... you know, appreciate what Swami has come to give us truly, I believe.
I see. It's been wonderful listening to you, very touching, and a lot of learning for myself just to hear what you're saying, Jatin Bhai. Not many of us can testify or even claim to have had that intensity, that burning desire to come so close to Swami and take that leap of faith. It's very brave of you to share your experiences and that internal process that you've been through.
Sarah, thank you.
I appreciate your candor very, very much.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity, Sarah.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned. Prema Sarupulara.
Embodiments of love.
Andaru Kalchi.
అందరు కూడా నువ్వు ఒక నోటితో పాడాలి భగవంతుని యొక్క నామం.
ఆల్ షుడ్ జాయిన్ సింగ్ ఇన్ కోరస్ ఫుల్ త్రో.
అంటే ఏకాత్మ భావాన్ని మీరు పెట్టుకుని దివ్యాత్మను మీరు దర్శించండి.
హ్యావ్ దిస్ ఫీలింగ్ ఆఫ్ సింథసిస్ హార్మనీ అండ్ వన్నెస్ డెవలప్ దట్ స్పిరిట్.
ఆన్ దిస్ మహాశివరాత్రి హియర్ ఇస్ ఎ హ్యాపీ న్యూస్. Radio Sai is delighted to offer at Bhagwan's Lotus Feet a new YouTube channel dedicated solely to Sai Bhajan.
Manas bhajare guru charanam dustara bhamasagare tere.
From March 4, 2019, for 50 days, every single morning, you can relish the joy of a specially curated and visually rich Sai Bhajan on this new YouTube channel, Radio Sai Bhajans. So do subscribe and share the good news of this channel.
ओंकार सतनाम करता पूरक निरपार निर्वैर अकाल मूरत अजूनी सेवन गुरु प्रसाद जप आद सच जुगाद सच है भी सच नानक होसी भी सच.
Thank you. Vaheguru, Vaheguru, Vaheguru Ji Bolo. Vaheguru, Vaheguru, Vaheguru Ji Bolo. Satyanam, Satyanam, Satyanam Ji Bolo. Satyanam, Satyanam, Satyanam Ji Bolo. Nit Nit Japiye Tere Naam Ji Bolo. Nit Nit Japiye Tere Naam Ji Bolo. Satyanam, Satyanam, Satyanam Ji Bolo. Satyanam, Satyanam, Satyanam Ji Bolo. Ram 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 Ji Bolo. Ram 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 Ji Bolo. Nit Nit Japiye Ram Naam Ji Bolo. Nit Nit Japiye Ram Naam Ji Bolo. Krishna 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 Ji Bolo. Krishna 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 Ji Bolo. Nit Nit Japiye Krishna Naam Ji Bolo. Nit Nit Japiye Krishna Naam Ji Bolo. Govinda Jai Jai Gopal Jai Jai Radha Raman Hari Govind Jai Jai Radha Raman Hari Govind Jai Jai Govind Jai Jai Gopal 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 Jai Jai Radha Raman Hari Govind Jai Jai Radha Raman Hari Govind Jai 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 Gopal Jai Jai Govind Jai Jai Gopal Jai Jai Govind Jai Jai Gopal Jai Jai